I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to the 905er podcast. My name is Roland Tanner.
I am Joel McLeod.
And this week we're going to have a 905 roundup, a couple of important stories which are starting to get well. One's received some attention, maybe deserves more, and the other one, well, we wonder if this is the start of the next big, potentially, scandal in provincial politics. So you heard it here first on your 905er, your reliable 905er. Let's turn first to the one which is only really seems to have been covered by City News in Toronto, but we kind of felt deserved a bit more attention. And that's the story of York Catholic District School Board showing having a presentation to students in Keswick, Ontario, or Keswick. I don't know how it's pronounced here.
Keswick,
where I came from, but yeah. A highly graphic anti-abortion presentation from an organization. Students have rightly, apparently there were a lot of walkouts. Apparently a lot of students were offended and upset by it. And Joel, what's the story?
Yeah, well, I mean, basically, that's it. This month in Keswick, at Our Lady of the Lake Catholic Academy in Keswick, grade 11 and 12 students were presented a anti-abortion material at an assembly at the school given by, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this name correctly, Keturah Dumain of the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform. And in the presentation, apparently, according to City News, the presentation was very graphic images of abortions being done or the after effects of an abortion without really prefacing to the students and to the staff exactly how graphic the presentation was. Pretty much that this organization, Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform, while it sounds very scientific and very educational, it apparently has a bit of a red flag and a reputation for doing this kind of stuff. And there's a lot of boards that do not allow them to present because they are essentially anti-abortion, pro-life motivated group. And rightfully so, a lot of students were offended. They were upset by it. They didn't necessarily buy into it, and they left. Apparently, according to the students who reported to City News, that a number of students, basically by the end of the presentation, the majority of them had walked out of the presentation. Now, the question on our mind is, why would this presentation be allowed to take place at all? And I know people say, well, it's a Catholic school and therefore they should be expected that this is what's going to happen. Does it really though? No, like the it comes down to the fact that the Catholic schools are publicly funded. It's yours and my tax dollars that operate them. They should meet a kind of a standard of expectation of what goes on there. Not to mention, they are teaching sex ed. Now, I know that people are saying, well, it's not the full sex ed, or it's a Catholicized, I guess, sex ed curriculum, but it is sex ed. And I don't
think
know.
it's, my understanding would be, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know. The curriculum is the curriculum, regardless of which high school you go to.
Yeah.
Sex ed should be the same, right?
So how sex ed works in the Catholic system is you have the fundamentals. You teach like body part names and you know the mechanics of how babies are made, and like, you know, nothing titillating or scandalous. It's like the bare bones, like this is the actual biology of how babies are made, with the correct terminology and everything. Now the idea is, for a while, the Catholics sex ed curriculum was operating with what they call as a fully alive textbook, which is now out of print and out of circulation. But in it, they discuss, they try to get into things such as same-sex relationships. They don't really touch upon transgender identities or gender spectrum. Any of that is not really touched upon. It is mentioned, I mean, the simple fact that there are transgender individuals in the province has to be acknowledged by the curriculum, but it's done with a Catholic flair that, you know, we're all created in God's image. And by God, they mean the Christian God, as it were. So there's, I mean, that we're not going to get into that. That's a whole other
thing. Well, I mean, I guess the problem is, I cannot see ever how you square this circle. That Catholic schools are at once obliged under law to, as a publicly funded institution, to be even-handed and unbiased, and to be as tolerant as any other school to differences and different, you know, the different ways that people are created, by whatever means they are created, whether by God or by whatever. They're obliged, that's the law. But at the same time, they have a right and indeed an obligation to pursue a Catholic perspective. And so, you know, YDSB has, actually, I'm just going to get the quote here, so I'll make sure I get it right. So YCDSB have apologized for this presentation and kind of accepted that it went too far. I was asked not to show photos of victims, of abortion victims, and we always comply with requests from schools, Dumaine said, from the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform. And YCDSB seemed to have said that this wasn't what is supposed to happen. But they at the same time defend their stance as a kind of pro-life organization. It's like, you can't have it both ways. You can't be a publicly funded organization with all those responsibilities and a polemically Catholic organization that is teaching Catholic principles. You can't do it. I just don't understand how this happens. And we'll come on to a second about the kind of dishonesty of what the school board has said. But no, go ahead, Joel. We'll come back to another point.
This is an organization that clearly has a political agenda, and that you may not agree. I don't think we agree with their viewpoint, but they are clearly, they have an agenda. They are anti-abortion, pro-life. They want to see it done away with in Ontario and Canada. That is their right to that opinion, but it's clear they have a political motivation behind this. Now, why would we allow, like, I don't see the educational aspect, because if the educational aspect is, then you, by contrary, right after this presentation is done, they have to allow like a Planned Parenthood to come in right after and say, okay, well, here's the other side of it. I mean, and that's, to me, a really ineffective use of tax dollars to educate students on this diverse topic. And whatnot. I come back to the fact that the school has to teach kids sexual health, sex ed. This presumably birth control and all its forms would be included in the curriculum. I know they were when I went to a Catholic school in my youth. We learned about birth control, like the condoms, the pill, all of that stuff. was all included. So to me, it says the fact that they allowed this organization to give a presentation, somebody at the board said, okay, I agree with the political angle of this. I want to instill my political views onto kids, impressionable kids, at this time.
And I just, you know, while we've been talking, actually, I just want to, just to give the YCDSB's point, in a statement they gave to City News, representative said the speaker departed from pre-agreed material and shared inappropriate content. On the same day as the presentation, the school sent an apology letter to the community for the upsetting content, and the school staff had conversations with students about the reactions to the material. Fine. But whoever booked this speaker will have done what we always do when we're booking people to come onto this podcast. You go to the website and you look at their homepage, and the very first image you will see on their homepage, actually the second image, is two pictures of aborted fetuses. See it, believe it, end it, what is abortion? The agenda of this organization is very, very clear. They say, under what is our strategy, the strategy is to show people pictures of murdered fetuses, in their terms, not in my terms. That's the strategy, to end the killing, as they put it, by showing people the killing.
Right.
You cannot book a speaker from this organization without knowing that that's their agenda. That's why they exist. That's what they do. To reach all of Canada with abortion victim photography and human rights apologetics to make abortion unthinkable and to end the killing. Okay, that's their right. But there's you know, the school has said that was not what they intended to show, but this organization exists primarily to do that. So who booked it? How naive were they? How stupid were they?
I wonder,
ill-intentioned were they when this booking was made?
I wonder if these are the people who, if you're driving around the around town and you find the anti-abortion people protesting on random street corners, and they have pictures of graphic pictures like that, they're poster boards that they're holding up, that you if you're on any Facebook community group, you get posts saying, hey, avoid this intersection because you're going to be stuck answering questions to kids that you don't necessarily want to do.
Yeah.
On your
way home. I suspect it is. I mean, on their blog, on the homepage, you could scroll down a couple of inches. They have the blog. Their most recent posts, which admittedly are not recent, they're from July and March last year. Well, there's one from November that isn't a graphic image, and from 24th of July and 3rd of March are pictures of their volunteers, I presume, because it's got the same branding as their website, with graphic pictures of aborted fetuses. In fact, three of the six images are of people doing exactly that. So yes, I think that's exactly what they are.
And I wonder if these are the same people, if you remember a while back, sporadically, you get postcards in your mailbox that if you asked your kids to go get the mail for me, and they go get it, and you get a postcard with gruesome aborted fetus in your, as a postcard, people say, well, how is this sent through the mail? And they didn't own up to, I wonder if this is the same group. Not sure if they are.
I guess the answer is that we don't know, but I would instinctively suspect that would be a policy they would have no problems with. Lessons from door knocking. Here we go. An article about door knocking in Calgary. So again, it seems to be fairly central to their credo that this kind of imagery is shared.
So this is all on
the homepage. I haven't even gone beyond the homepage.
Right.
Apart from
I'm looking at it with you right now, and it is shocking. And it's just, you're right. Somebody would have said, okay, let's go take a look at the website, see what we're getting into. And after seeing this, somebody either at the board or at that school said, yeah, I agree with this. This is acceptable content to present to impressionable teenagers in an Ontario publicly funded school. Like, this is I wanted to bring this up because why CDSB has come up in the news in the last couple of years for kind of this outrageous behavior. When the Pride flag debate was happening, YCDSB was kind of the last holdout of anti-Pride flag hysteria.
Yeah, I mean, they've been in the news in regard to the Pride flag issue. So I don't know how that, I need to remind myself how I should put it, how that ended.
I believe it ended with the flag. I'll be honest, I don't recall off the top of my head, but I remember, yeah. There was a virulent movement to not have the flag flown there. But I look at this, and I don't find these are two isolated incidents. I find them mutually exclusive, is that this, the idea of sexual health and sexual reproductive rights and sexual identity all come hand in hand with a very conservative minded movement that you and I have kind of seen this kind of take root in Catholic schools, which is, and it's something that I think has changed very much from when I went to a Catholic high school. It was kind of there, but it was kept mum. It was kind of like, okay, yeah, we know it's there and we kind of shake it off. But there seems to be a more, I don't want to say militant, but more coordinated movement to kind of, anything to do with sex needs to be a very conservative mm-hmm. point of view, whether it's sexual health, sexual identity, whatever the case might be, and it has to be politicized and controlled.
There's a theme here, and there's actually, it's not just the right that's doing this. I mean, the far right, well, the Christian and religious right, as opposed to the kind of politically racist right. I mean, there's overlap, but they're not always mutually the same thing. But also the more extreme left are both using school board elections as a way of getting candidates elected. You know, we were talking about anti-Semitism a few weeks back, and you know, some of the more extreme, I believe, extreme comments that cross the line from you know, an opinion about what's happening in Israel and Gaza into just outright anti-Semitism have come from school board trustees in Hamilton, or a school board trustee in Hamilton. We know that the Catholic school board, but also the public school board, is targeted by, you know, the family, was it the Life, I can't remember what they're called, the Life Coalition people.
Campaign Life.
Coalition. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, the person who replaced Andrea Grebentz, if I remember rightly, in the Houghton Catholic, in the Houghton Public School Board, not the Catholic one, was someone who was backed by the Campaign Life people, someone who previously run for councillor, at which time I was surprised if they could spell their own name. They were so incredibly stupid. is now a school trustee with the backing of that kind of organization, because the guy's so dumb he'll say anything to get elected. But he's a right wing candidate, right? It's a problem. I mean, the school boards don't really exist. The elected school boards are, I mean, they've been a consistent source of stories for us, because of the ridiculous things that come out of them all the time.
Well, it's one of those, but it's because, you know, I'm going to toot our own horn here. Nobody really covers school boards. There's a couple of great journalists at the Globe and at the Toronto Star. Noor Javid from the Star covers the 905 and does a lot of, I find that she tends to go into a lot of school board discussion there, as well as Caroline Alfonso of the Globe. She's the education beat reporter there. She's done fantastic work. But again, it's their work is kind of tucked away into the back pages of the front of the A section. I think we've done a good job of kind of getting into the weeds a bit with what is going on in the board. And I think you bring up a good point, Roland, with the right seems to go after the Catholic boards because it's kind of it's easy to get that religious fervor tied in, and the fear of, I don't know, the LGBTQ community, that bigotry of they're going to come after your kids, that tired trope and outright bigotry feeds well into segments of that community. Not all, but segments. But you're right on the right on the left, and I find they tend to go to the public board, and that ardent, fervent left of anti-Semitism when it comes to Israel and Palestine just comes, kind of finds a home there, because the idea is, oh no, we're progressive, and therefore we know what's, you know, we're all about what's best for people. And you're right, that notion of, well, the anti-Semitic rhetoric that we've seen in relation to the Middle East is taking root there. And
well, and then we see, you know, you see school boards which have no business talking about foreign politics at all.
Yes.
Passing motions about the Middle East, or having, you know, extended debates about things. It's like, this is not your role. Right. Your role is to
keep the lights on at the school and a fresh coat of paint on the walls, essentially.
Yeah, and it's a way to get these issues that they want to talk about, that they are obsessed by, into the public eye. And of course it works, because here we are talking about them. But it's not how school boards are supposed to work. I suspect that the kind of the policy of trying to get people onto Catholic school boards is now also turning into a policy of trying to get people onto public school boards too. Again, I've certainly seen that in Halton.
It's a copycat of what happened in America, where the right in America spent decades kind of getting their people come up through the ground level. When they got their people onto school boards and into municipal offices in the states, and they used those platforms to launch careers into state and in some cases federal legislative positions, senators, congress people at both state and federal levels. And that's what I believe is happening here in Canada, is that they're starting now and getting them into the school boards and municipal councils with the hope of, well, you can then jump into running for federal MP or a provincial MPP. And what happens there, the politicization of these bodies is dangerous in my mind.
Well, it's damaging. A few of these people, then, you know, well, we know that, and to an extent, it's you know, I can Cam Jackson, former Burlington MPP, was a trustee first. Kathleen Wynne was a school trustee before she was an MPP. There are many others. It doesn't necessarily, you know, as a training wheels for politicians, it has a long history. The problem is it doesn't help the schools. And it comes back to the Catholic school system in Ontario is indefensible as currently construed. I'm not sure if it can ever be defensible, but I'm an atheist, so, you know, what am I going to do? You know, it's I'm always going to find it offensive ultimately. So maybe I'm on an extreme on that particular issue. However, as currently, you know, even if you are a Christian, even if you are Catholic, you can find this just absolutely offensive that public funds are being used in this way. And the elected side is almost a separate issue that again, it comes back to this, just like, why do we have elected school boards? We don't have elected police boards. We don't have elected environmental, conservation authorities. Mm-hmm. They're not elected. There are all these other organizations that spend public money, and in the case of the police board, vast amounts of public money, that do not have elected boards. It doesn't have to be. I cannot see that the trustees of any school board in Ontario are better because they're elected. I suspect they're usually much worse because they're elected. You would get a better quality of person if you didn't elect them.
Well, you kind of have to question if you reduce the school board to, you're right, an appointed board, whether that power is given to the Minister of Education and the Premier or to municipal councils, whatever the case may be. It's open to reform. But the idea of and it, limiting it to a mandate of basically accounting oversight. Money is given to the board for distribution within said school board to, you know, buy new textbooks.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
To put new coats of paint, to build a new school in the appropriate neighborhoods, if need be, close schools, if need be. And those decisions probably should be done at a local level. I get that. But yeah, the electability of, okay, we're going to give you the power of a democratic vote. And so therefore you have license to go speak whatever your mind is. Do we need it at that level? No. It makes more sense to say, well, instead of hiring, because the question is like, who would want the job, right? Other than going to an accountant or somebody with financial background to say, just oversee these hundreds of millions of dollars, an oversight board to make sure that money is being spent properly.
I mean,
that's really what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. I mean, the average school board meeting, once you've taken out the nonsense, the stuff about pride flags and abortion and all the rest of it, you've taken all that garbage out of the equation, which they shouldn't be talking about anyway.
No.
The actual job is not a particularly time-consuming or difficult job.
No.
And this is done the world over by boards, unelected boards, with no great controversy. I mean, there's no great controversy about... you could make the argument the police boards should be elected, given the money and how they're... a couple of years ago, the Halton Police Board, Police Services Board, was 100% male and 100% white. It isn't anymore, but about 5 years ago it was. But that's pretty appalling, right? But regardless, take that out of the equation. There's never been a great deal of controversy about the makeup of the police boards. Right. I mean, I think it could probably be better, but there's no great demand for it to become elected. This is a historical accident. We have elected school boards. And the school boards, by and large, are terrible. They're either doing a job that no one cares about greatly, in which case, good for them. They're doing a decent job. You know, we shouldn't care. It's a mundane kind of thing that they should be doing. Or they're creating a stink about things that are none of their business. It's, this is, again, it's a broken system, like so often everything we look at.
That's correct. All right. Well, let's take a break for this, and we'll be back with our second top-notch story.
This is Charles Adler. After a few years of working on radio and television, The Charles Adler Show has evolved to a natural place in 2023. YouTube, podcast, and open RSS. You'll hear the show as it always has been delivered, concise, with context, clarity, and empathy. And as a bonus, the guests will be natural-born storytellers who won't fear telling stories that are personal and emotional. They won't fear uncomfortable questions. Most important, they won't fear me. Follow me on Twitter at Charles Adler and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, and we are back. We're still sticking with the theme of education on this one, folks, but we're going up a level to post-secondary. It's been reported that in the Trillium.ca, as well as the Toronto Star, I believe, as well, by Trillium.ca by Aidan Chimandi. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing his name right. If Aidan, if you're listening and I'm not, let me know. But as everybody knows, the foreign student pipeline is being cut off, and it's causing a lot of turmoil in our post-secondary institutions. But not so much, but the really comes down to is the public colors that in private partnership schools. So these are private schools that issue diplomas or degrees and are privately funded. They're entirely private. They don't get money from the public, but they do donate to politicians, namely progressive conservatives. More specifically, the Minister of Colleges and Universities, Jill Dunlop, up in Simcoe North, who received almost $27,000 from the directors and executives of these private colleges in recent accounting fundraising. We want to bring this up because the whole thing is shaping up to be a much deeper story from what we're hearing. What we're reading is that basically what we're seeing is that the provincial government has frozen tuitions, frozen funding to our post-secondary institutions for the last 6 years. So schools, our post-secondary institutions have not had an increase in funding. And basically they're using foreign students to offset that loss of money. And when that happened, these private colleges were given license to operate, because that would be another, again, the private sector is supposed to do everything so much better. But what they do is they go to overseas, they go to places like India, China, and get poor students or students who are thinking they're going to come to a great country like ours, get an education and better themselves. Instead, they're going to these Trump University lights, as we like to call them. And they're not cheap to go to either, but they have enough money to donate to the progressive conservative party here in Ontario. What are you thinking of this, Roland?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and the article in Trillium, thetrillium.ca, if you're not familiar with it, is excellent. Aidan Chimandi's piece, it goes into a lot of detail. Research, it's done a lot of research into who's donating what to whom, the kind of grunt work that the real journalists do of finding out exactly how much money is being spent. And remember, back before 2018, quite a long time before 2018, as a 15, 16 ish, the Ontario Liberal government of the day abolished corporate donations. And we've spoken before about the farce of the abolition of corporate donations, in that Jill Dunlop, Minister Jill Dunlop, is holding fundraising events, which she attends, which also used to be banned, but has been unbanned under the Conservatives, at which directors and executives of public-private partnership schools attended in large numbers, donating so-called personal checks. Like, legally, they're personal checks. They will claim that they are personal checks, that they have nothing to do with the fact that they are employed by these educational institutions that are benefiting from the government. And they are spending, let me just check here what the actual number is. $150,000, over $150,000 from executives of public-private college partnerships, kind of in the last couple of years, looking at the article here. Now we're familiar with this from our time in politics. I've been at events which were held, which had, you would have a guest minister, and you would have but at that time it was legal. Everybody did it. It was legal, and it was traced that the donation came from, say, Pfizer or from some other medical organization, and at least that's all traced. Now we have this situation where this is all going through, kind of clouded by the fiction of personal donations. It's cash for access. I mean, it always was cash for access. It's just that now we say that cash for access is illegal, but it's cash for access. It's clear what's going on here. Mm-hmm. They are taking money from people who want good things to come from the government. There's no two ways about it. They're not going to waste this kind of money for any other reason. And if you're the principal or whatever the head person at a university is called these days, the chancellor or whatever of a university in Ontario, you can't do this. You can't go along to a political event and pony up $3,000 or whatever the limit is to go to this event. Can't do that. And it wouldn't be particularly, well, A, it would look terrible. Your staff, half your staff would be in rebellion. And, it's got a shitty look about it. Plus, you're working for a public university. Even if you're the chancellor, you're not that well paid. The question is, of course, how many of these people get this money paid back to them? And that should be a question that's asked about every donation made by people with corporate connections who go to fundraisers. Because I suspect a large part of it finds its way back from
Oh,
the
yeah.
business into the pot. I do not believe these people are really paying out of their own pockets. Certainly not when it's family members, when it's husbands, wives, sisters,
The simple f
sons.
I think the simple fact that it's clear these people are going to these events not because they have a deep-seated connection to Minister Dunlop to see her represent Simcoe North once again. It's they have an agenda. That you're exactly right. It's money for access. It always has been. It always will be under this system. Somebody wants, and that's the thing. If you say, okay, get rid of the progressive conservatives next election, fine. But under the rules, it just means the Liberals or the NDP they just take the place. Those people start going to those fundraisers and they start giving over the $1,500 checks and spending money to ensure that their thing is open. Why I find this story to be more of a scandal is that I think it's going to tie into the housing crisis. And the reason for that is former guest of the podcast, Mike Moffat, has pointed out a big chunk of the housing crisis being fueled by foreign students coming into Ontario looking for housing and winding up taking up rental opportunities that and just limiting that market. Now people are going to blame the federal government for it, and they do have a hand in this. So their hands aren't completely clean. But I think this shows, or it's going to start to show, is that rather than try and allow this to happen more on a more managed scale, a more transparent scale, and a more ethical scale, I'll say the Ford government decided, well, this is our way out from actually funding public institutions. And when rather than giving more money to our colleges, our public colleges and our public universities, and maybe helping to manage tuition costs or that much, they just said, no, just go after these foreign students, get them to come in and they'll cover whatever lack of funding you have, they'll cover it. And then again, in the belief of, hey, the private sector is what's best. They can do it better. Some guy
And
came to.
just to and just sorry, just to jump in, just to add
Sure.
perspective on this. So when the PCs came in 2018, the first thing that they did was cancel a whole bunch of funding that the Liberals had provided, basically to support student tuition. The student tuitions would be paid by the government, which obviously increases access for students to universities. So they got rid of that, but they also froze. Not only did they take that away, but as a way of kind of saying, hey, look, we're not really screwing students over, they said, well, look, we'll just freeze tuition fees instead, and that will have the same effect. So since 2018, universities have not been able to increase their tuition fees. During an era of much higher inflation and everything else that's come. So basically, there has been a massive funding cut to every university in Ontario since the PCs came in. And they're now saying, well, it's because, the foreign students have been taken away from us, which on the surface, I will admit, was like, yeah, I know how much universities have depended on foreign students for a long time. But, the crisis was already there before the foreign students issue came along. Now, the other thing with these public-private institutions is that most of the degrees these institutions are giving out are not worth the paper they're written on.
Well,
They're
let me
garbage colleges that nobody wants to fucking go to. Come
here's the
on.
thing. listeners, would you ever hire somebody from the Alf College of Business and Technology, if that's all they had on their resume? Or perhaps would you trust Pura's College of Technology to have one of their graduates in a key role in your organization? My bet is you're sitting there going, I don't even know what you're talking about, Joel. And that's the thing. Like, these are private diploma firms. These aren't meant to educate people. I don't think they are meant to really provide a sound education or to instill the next generation with the tools necessary to build the economy of Ontario's future. These are meant to, I need an excuse to go to India, to go to China, get a bunch of kids there who don't know any different, come to Canada with the expectation of I'm going to have a great education and a great life here. And instead, they're put into a business park somewhere in Scarborough, somewhere in Brampton. And they're basically given garbage diplomas that aren't worth the paper that they're printed on. Meanwhile,
yeah, and I think we should sort of just point out for just you know, we don't know the specifics of any particular college. You don't want to make sort of legal accusations about specific colleges. And some of these colleges are in partnerships. Actually, most of them are in partnerships with more established colleges. So that's fine. However, I think as a general principle, I think we can stand by that this is these colleges don't provide the kind of kudos the more established colleges do provide. So why do they exist? And it's a way of people getting into the system. You can't get in through qualifications alone for foreign students. I mean, again, these guys are really going after foreign students. So of course they've been screwed by this whole business. But it's not about, you know, there's recently been a similar scandal in Australia when people just realized there are about like 200 so-called universities or colleges in one street in Sydney. I think it was Sydney. And these are just offices with a couple of people running so-called academic institutions out of a couple of offices in a high rise. This is the avenue that this appears to have been going down. And regardless, even if they are completely above the board, completely working within the legal framework, and let's say that they are, then we've got a situation where they are making massive donations to a minister who a year later makes significant changes to the law that is beneficial to them. Where have we heard that happening before? Was it to do with, you know, the development industry, maybe, that we heard that happening before? You know, there's almost a direct line you can draw between fundraising events happening and decisions being made. It stinks. And it's also not fair on the public institutions that they can't even kind of compete by donating similar amounts of money. They can't do that. Again, like if the chancellor of University X goes to a fundraiser with a conservative politician, they could literally, you know, face a rebellion from their staff because they're subject to so many more sort of constraints and opinions within the university community.
Well, I think it just comes to the underlying ethos of this provincial government is they hate spending money. And I know that people say, oh, that's great. That's a, you know, good stewards of tax dollars and whatnot. But this is way beyond that. I mean, you need to spend money on education. Like this is a government, I would honestly say, I think hates the idea of schools. They hate the idea of public education at all levels. The idea of well-funded, well-paid teachers, well-paid schools, well-funded schools. They hate it for some reason. They hate the idea of funding universities in Ontario for some reason. They hate the idea that these schools, people come out challenged. Now, whether or not that's the fact that Doug Ford himself never finished post-secondary, never, I don't think he made it through an entire year, first year of post-secondary. And the idea that people are smarter than him terrify him, that he's intimidated by somebody who has a degree in something, no matter what, is I really don't know. I don't know why this is such a fear of, hey, let's find a way to fund our colleges and universities so that they are world-class, that when you come out with a degree from McMaster or from Brock or U of T or my alma mater, University of Waterloo, that, you know, it stands for something in the world. You have something that you can put behind your name and it has some weight to it, instead of, you know, oh, now I got to compete with the Alpha College of Business and Technology for prestige. Like that's kind of messed up if you think about it.
I mean, we can't be surprised that Doug Ford, a guy basically elected on the basis that he was dumb as a stump, as you know, and proud of it, has no love or trust in higher education. The guy, I mean, obviously, they've never been there, so they know nothing about it. Of course, they think it's bloated and wasteful and just basically a breeding ground for leftist woke agendas. And, you know, these guys assume that there are thousands of people being, you know, coming out with degrees in lesbian trans studies or whatever. Bullshit nonsense. Places like Ontario, places like Canada, we can't compete on wages with China. So how do we compete? We compete because we have education, but we're falling behind there too. Chinese universities are no longer kind of faceless, goodness knows what places. The Chinese universities are doing good research because they've got the money to pour into excellent education. So the one competitive advantage we have in the West, we're losing. Because we're not funding our education properly, and in fact, we're electing politicians who are proud of their ignorance, and proud of the fact that they don't think very hard about anything. You know, and I was no fun of Margaret Thatcher in my youth, or Mulroney, or people like that. But at least they were goddamn educated. You know, they'd been to a decent university, and you might not agree with them, but they weren't idiots. Now we're proudly electing people who can hardly spell their own name. It's a dangerous situation.
Indeed. We said at the start of this segment, I don't think this story is going away. I think this is going to become another Greenbelt scandal. A prediction for 2024. We'll see how the year ends out, but mark my words, that's what we suspect. So we'll keep an eye on this as the story unfolds, and we'll keep coming back to it. Unfortunately, I suppose, as the year rolls on, but I don't think this one's going away either. This government just, they cannot find a way to cut public funding for public institutions fast enough and hand it over to public institutions that, quite frankly, aren't up to the replacement challenge, in my humble opinion.
Yep, and I encourage people to go and dig out that article on the trillium.ca. I think it's a really good one.
We'll post links in the show notes for you folks. So go take a look at it. They're doing good work over there. Give them some love. All right, I'm going to call it quits on this one. Thanks very much, everyone. We'll be back next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's it for this episode of the 905er. Thank you for listening. As always, you can send us your feedback, thoughts, and concerns, or ideas for future episodes to our email, info@905er.ca. We'd love to hear from you. You can help us keep the 905er going by financially supporting us through Patreon as well as PayPal. Visit us at 905er.ca and click on the support tab. As well, links are in the show notes for your convenience. Lastly, you can find us on social media. Search for the_905er on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. So long for now. See you next time.
Hi, I'm Connie Thiessen, the host of Broadcast Dialogue, the podcast. We focus on Canada and the challenges facing Canadian radio and TV, as well as highlighting those moving the industry forward from podcasting and streaming to new broadcast tech. Check us out at BroadcastDialogue.com or your favorite podcast app.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.